listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams, stop dieting so you can make peace with food and get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is my mission for you. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you want to call in and talk with me, the number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. It's what's eating at you. It's what's going on within you. It's what's weighing on you. If you're turning to food, it is for a reason. Food is the answer to the problem. It is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem, not the problem. It's just a solution that ends up hurting you. So I just want to finish up last week. By the way, Ronan, on my Instagram thing is covering my text thing for you. So any caller that comes in, just interrupt me and start talking, because I can't actually see that you're there. I'm simultaneously broadcasting on Instagram, and that is covering my text from my engineer, Ronan. So if you join the show, just say, "Hey, Dr. Nina, whatever's going on with me, just interrupt me. I'd rather hear from you than keep talking." Okay, so last time I talked about some of the similarities between what you do with food and what you do with money. And the last category was about what are you hiding. So let me ask you this. Do you buy a lot of clothes, shoes, cosmetics, if you're a woman? Or, hey, if you're not, why not? Maybe you're trying to create a different persona. Maybe clothes and appearance-related things make you feel like the person you want to be, because who you are doesn't seem good enough. So example, Adam. He had a different wardrobe for all his different lives. That's how he put it. He said, I have different clothes for all my different lives. He bought work clothes, weekend clothes, clothes he wore when he hung out with his artsy friends, and clothes he wore with his golf buddies, clothes he wore with his family. They were all these totally different wardrobes, totally different clothes. So we all want to dress appropriately. Nobody is going to wear jeans to a black tie function or a ball gown to the gas station. But Adam's clothes function like a costume, like a facade, like a false persona. They kept people from seeing the real Adam. So Adam had a hard time being with himself. And when he wasn't shopping, he was struggling with food. So Adam shopped and ate to distract himself from thoughts and feelings that seemed intolerable. He couldn't be with himself. He was always busy doing things and dressing appropriately for each activity, of course. So when Adam learned to slow down, when he learned how to be with himself in a new way, he was able to use food and shopping differently. He was able to eat when he was hungry instead of eating to fill an emptiness or to distract himself from an uneasiness about, you know, what did he have said wrong with this group of friends, or were they going to judge him, or was he fitting in, or was he good enough? You know, eating distracted him from those thoughts, and shopping gave him the illusion that he was one of the crowd, when inside he really didn't feel like he was. Because if you're empty and lonely, no amount of food will fill that void. If you're struggling with conflicts about independence, abundance, connection, shopping and eating only provide like a temporary distraction. If you don't feel comfortable with yourself, clothes, makeup, hair products, whatever, they will not make you feel better either. Either will food. So if you want to make peace with food, if you want to feel better and feel better about yourself, the battleground is not shopping or eating. It's your relationship with yourself. And when you identify and process what's going on within and learn a new way of relating to what you feel, and what you think, everything changes. And it looks like I have a caller.
Hi, Dr. Nina.
Hi, Josh.
How are you?
I am well. Let me just make you a little bit louder.
Okay. So I noticed you were saying some things on your Instagram. I happened to look at your Instagram. One was about the Wizard of Oz, sort of this person who is hiding from everyone and is maybe ashamed of himself or something like that. And then the other posts were about sort of the same idea. So you had a few posts that were like basically all kind of saying the same thing, which is obviously really important, sort of like, are we really being genuine, right? Is that what you were getting at?
Well, what I'm getting at is the idea that so many people feel like they have to put on an act, be different, be who they think other people want them to be in order to be good enough, in order to be liked, loved, in order to feel likable and lovable. And the point of these posts, and also that I did a show a couple weeks ago or a few, I don't know, recently, about how the Wizard of Oz and the characters in the Wizard of Oz can really tell us a lot about ourselves. And of course, the great and powerful Oz is someone who felt like he had to project this image so that people would respect him and like him, because he thought that the guy behind the curtain, who was a perfectly fine guy, perfectly nice guy, good guy, he thought that nobody would like him or respect him. And this is so common with so many of us. We feel like who we really are is not enough. And that makes us feel bad. And when we feel bad, we are likely to turn to food to feel better. Or we imagine that by changing our bodies and our weight, that we're going to somehow be more likable. People will like us more. We have, you know, so there are so many different ways in which our culture kind of says, hey, look this way and you'll be better somehow. And we need to challenge that notion. And challenge the notion that you have to be differently to be accepted and acceptable.
Yeah, I think that's such an amazing message. I feel like sometimes when, you know, part of me, when I read that, was scared. I was scared about myself. Like, sometimes we're scared. I've said this before, like Christopher Bolas, the complexity of our own minds. Like, we're scared of how deep it goes, aren't we? You know,
yes, a lot of people are very disturbed by even the notion of the unconscious, which is that there are ideas and conflicts and feelings even that are hidden from us. They are out of awareness, but not out of operation. But when you can get more interested in your unconscious mind, when you can get more interested in the different parts of you that you may or may not be aware of, things change, because then that helps you heal. When you see it, you can deal with it. When you don't see it and it's hidden, it just runs your life. And often that has to do with food, turning to food. People say, oh, I was triggered by this food. But no, they were triggered by something, and food was their solution. They actually have it backwards. And whatever.
Yeah, so we shouldn't necessarily be afraid of this thing called an unconscious.
So Josh, what about, how does this this concept of showing the real you or being more comfortable with yourself, how does that resonate with you?
Well, that's what I just said. So I shouldn't be afraid of my own unconscious. because all, you know, it's not like this big scary thing that you would see and then just be horrified about. And even if you were, it's not the kind of fear like someone like, you know, coming out from a corner and going like, ha, you know, like that's not how it is. You know, it's sort of like, oh, that's interesting. And what does that mean? It could be that much later. But I guess for me, it's just, I'm fine with looking at my unconscious.
Well, I think that's wonderful. I love hearing that. What are you feeling conflicted about right now? Instead of talking about unconscious, what is it that you're struggling with or grappling with?
Well, I guess, more of the same of what we've been already working on. I feel like, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time today. I was just going to keep it short, but it's just the same idea. You know, there's a way of thinking about myself that wasn't correct, you know, but it was not conscious. It was not conscious. And when we brought it to consciousness, it wasn't a scary thing. You know, I thought of myself as dirty or low or whatever. And it wasn't that big of a deal once we talked about it. It certainly wasn't scary to me, and I don't think it was scary to anyone else. So there's probably more there, and that's maybe why I'm calling, but I feel pretty satisfied with the work we did last week. But it does need to be, it's sort of like, it needs to continue being, you know, it's not like I would want to go back where I was before.
Well, and you can't really go back, because once it's in the light and in the open and you deal with it, it doesn't go back. You don't go backwards. You don't go back into the dark. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. So once you realize that there were these ideas that you got as a result of, let's say, your relationship with your father, these ideas that you got about yourself based on your interpretation as a child that you then took as reality and felt, you know, dirty meaning not good enough, dirty meaning shame, and challenged the shame and challenged the idea that there was something wrong with that little 5-year-old boy or, you know, 15-year-old boy or grown-up man, you're not going to go backwards. Once you do it and work through it and challenge it and see it differently, you know, that's transformation. That's evolution.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that comes up is sort of like, what if I had known that at 15? You know, I'm not 15. I'm a little older than 15. But what if I had known that earlier than I know it now, you know, and do I have regrets about the life I've lived not having the awareness of my unconscious, right? And it's a very hard thing to talk about.
Yeah. And I think that's a kind of a way that you're torturing yourself, because you discovered this about yourself now. You took the risk to call this radio show now. You're dealing with it now. So saying, oh, if only, you know, would imagine that here's something that can help. Imagine yourself later in life. Imagine your 45-year-old self looking back and saying to your present day self, wow, good for you for not, you know, for dealing with this now. Because believe me, I have a lot of people who walk into my office for the first time in their 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, who've struggled their whole lives and only learned to know themselves at that point. And they're glad to know themselves at that point. And do they wish that they had done it in their 30s, 20s, whenever? Yeah. At 15, yes. At 5, yes. But that line of thinking only makes you feel bad. I want you to acknowledge that you're doing it now. And that's going to change your future.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's very cliche, but it's never too late to change. I mean, it's a very cliche statement.
Well, cliches have a basis in truth. And you know, that is true. It's never too late to change the way you feel about yourself, because if you're thinking that the enemy is food, and you're constantly on this diet or that diet or this workout plan or, you know, counting macros or not eating carbs or what, you know, whatever it is, if you're constantly battling food, you're fighting the wrong thing. When you get to why you were turning to food, what was going on within that made food the solution, then you change for good. That's why I call this liberation, not being in recovery. In recovery sounds terrible. Who wants to be in recovery? Ugh. No, that sounds terrible. I want you to be liberated. Put this behind you. You win the diet war. You're free. You're liberated. You move on with your life. You feel good. You don't go backwards.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny when people talk about, generally, I feel like the in vogue conversation about the stomach and food and say mental health and happiness takes the form of, it's about the biotics in the intestines. It's about the, you know, whether or not you have good enough bacteria, the right kind of bacteria, and eat more fiber and eat more fruits and vegetables. But I do think there's an aspect to what you've been saying, which is, no, it's not so much that. It really has to do with the unconscious. And even if you may not be underweight or overweight, you might still have an issue with food. Still, would you agree?
Of course. You cannot tell if someone has an eating disorder by how they look. You cannot tell how they look. So to your point first, we have brains and we have the physical being that we are. We have brains, but we also have minds. And our minds are powerful and our minds do affect our brain chemistry. Our minds are powerful. When you change your mind, you change your reality. When you change the way you perceive things, including yourself, you change your reality. When you focus on what you're eating, you are plucking weeds. And I want to help people get to the root, which, like the unconscious, is hidden. You cannot see a root. It's underground. It's hidden from sight. But we know it's there because it grows the weeds. Similarly, there are aspects of our mind that we can't discern, we can't see, but they create behavior. Regarding the not being able, you cannot tell whether someone has an eating disorder by how they look. People with bulimia and binge eating disorder often are completely normal weight. Some people are overweight. Some people are not overweight with binge eating disorder. People with anorexia, people think if you are, you know, have anorexia, you should look like a Holocaust survivor. No, some people do, yes. But not everybody with anorexia looks that way. You cannot tell. There are reasons why people are super skinny that have nothing to do with anorexia. There are reasons why people are overweight that have nothing to do with binge eating disorder. You can't tell by looking at someone if they are struggling with an eating disorder. It's so important.
Yeah, I really like that. I feel like I want to say something about psychoanalysis in general. I mean, most people say it's neuroscience. Take this pill and do this, or it's in your gut. Eat the right kind of foods. But you just said it. The mind, like the gut, also affects the brain, which is so funny to say, but it needs to be said. There's also this thing called the mind that affects the actual physical brain itself. Yeah. So I think that, I don't know why I needed to say that, but I feel like it does need to be said, even though it seems to be so obvious.
Well, it's one of those things that's obvious once you know it. You can't see what you can't see, but once you see it, you say, oh, duh, there it is. And we live in a society that is increasingly about things being brain-based. And we are not brains. We are minds. Our minds are so powerful. Our brains are just the organs of our body. Our minds are that which can, you know, our thoughts, our feelings, our ideas are, you know, so much more powerful than just, you know, what's going on in our brains. So that's why I want to challenge everyone to challenge your thinking. Thoughts and ideas lead to feelings, lead to behavior. When you change the way you think, change the way you see yourself, change the way you respond, change the way you feel. And when you change the way you feel, or when you change the way you respond to yourself when you have feelings, you stop using food for comfort, distraction, reward, what have you. Whatever it's doing for you, when you find a new way of being, that goes away.
Yeah. What would you say about the connection between, say, the stomach and all of those nerve endings that are in there? People call it a second brain that is in the stomach, and the brain and the mind. I mean, what do you, I mean, obviously it's connected. I mean, boy, well, is it connected or not? I mean, it's really connected.
When Prozac first came out, decades and decades ago, people said, oh, this is going to be the cure for eating disorders, because people who are depressed may turn to food. And if we can just medicate their depression, they're going to stop having eating disorders. It's going to be radical. Well, what happened? That didn't happen. You know, yes, you can mitigate depression or anxiety or whatever through medications, but ultimately medications cannot change the way you think. They cannot change the way you perceive the world. They cannot change those things, which then in turn affect the way you feel, which has implications on what you're doing with food or whatever. So that's why I say the mind is ultimately more powerful than whatever is going on with us biochemically, even though
yeah,
we think does impact our brains.
Yeah, and I feel like I probably shouldn't say this, but I feel like the people who are pushing these kinds of messages where it's as if the brain doesn't even exist might be have a vested interest in protecting their own sort of dirty minds. I hate to use the word dirty, but say unkempt or not. And I'm one of them. But I think it's interesting that people would push a notion where the mind's fine. We don't have to think of the mind. Maybe because their mind is not quite organized correctly. I don't even know. There's no word to say, you know, what to say. But that's what comes to mind. And I apologize for saying this.
Well, Josh, it is a lot easier to focus on calories, carbs, workouts. And all these things, it is a lot easier to focus on that than it is to feel shame. You know, when you talked about the dirty feelings of eating fast, you're talking about shame, and working through shame is a lot more difficult than going, okay, I only had these many calories and I counted my macros and I'm not having any carbs and I'm this and I'm that. That's easier than looking inside and looking at what is really eating at you. It's harder work, but it's ultimately the only thing that creates liberation and peace.
Yeah. And also, some of the workouts we're doing, not all of them are very healthy, maybe. So, yeah, I that's why I'm calling. That's why I listen to your show. I feel like it's absolutely genius. And, you know, you're not the only psychoanalyst, but you definitely are out in the public more than anyone I know, which is just so fantastic. I'm sure it's difficult for you to be able to do that, but I like taking advantage of it because of everything you just said, which is we don't recognize the power of the unconscious, and yet we are going so crazy in all these ways to fix everything. It's not just food, but you know, that's your focus. And yes, I was eating fast. I was eating fast because I thought the pain would go away fast, but it didn't. You know, my method of dieting, in a sense, was to eat fast, which is not a good way to go about doing it.
But it was purposeful. Look, if you're eating fast and eating gets associated with needing and wanting and yearning, and that is shameful, then you're going to do it fast just to get away from the bad feeling. But when eating becomes eating, and breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks, and eating when you're hungry, it's such a relief. And then you don't have the shame. Or we learn how to relate to ourselves. We learn it. I mean, here's the good news. We learn how to relate to ourselves and other people and food and the world. We can unlearn that and learn a new way. And that's what I'm here to help with, is to help deconstruct, identify and deconstruct ideas you have about yourself and construct a new way of being in the world.
Your inquiry, your psychoanalytic inquiry, is not actually that different from someone who would be suffering from major depression or anxiety or schizophrenia or any of these other mental health issues. I feel like it's the same sort of task.
It's all about, I co-edited a book with my mentor, Dr. Salman Akhtar, called Beyond the Primal Addiction. And I mean, it's kind of an academic scholarly book, but it was about all kinds of addictions. But the premise of the book, you know, I did the one on quote unquote food addiction, because you know I don't believe in food addiction, but it's for the purposes of the book, it was called food addiction. Gambling addiction, shopping addiction, all these different addictions that we talked about in the book. And the bottom line is that they are all ways of coping, just really deleterious, bad coping mechanisms. And when you learn this, I'm oversimplifying, but when you learn to cope differently with what's going on inside, you no longer have to deal with that. You no longer want to use food. You no longer want to drink or gamble or shop or do whatever, be on the internet, because you've resolved the root core issue and you found a new way of being with yourself. And so that is my mission, to teach people and to spread the word. So Josh, thank you for helping me do exactly that.
Well, thank you for helping me recognize that my own behavior wasn't actually doing the trick. Part of me knew something was wrong, but my way of dealing with it certainly wasn't effective.
Yeah.
So I thank you.
That you are very welcome. You're very welcome. And I love hearing your insights and your, you know, every week you're more insightful and also gentler with yourself, which is lovely to see. Keep up the good work. No pressure.
Yeah. And I feel like it's a side effect is having a nice understanding of you, and I'm sure you have an interesting understanding of me, and that's a side effect. But what a nice side effect to sort of try to understand another human being.
Yeah, and to understand and for each human being to understand himself and herself in a more meaningful way, to have a more meaningful life is important. Carly Gash is saying, I am proud of you, Josh, and I'm happy for you.
Well, isn't that something? I really enjoyed when I first turned on, you know, tuned into the show, Carly was, I guess that's her first name. Carly was on, and that really sort of made me think that I could do it too. I mean, she sort of inspired me to call in and to be more vocal. And, but I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm sure she wants to call in next. So, but I would just say that when you get to the root of everything, it's not so scary. I think that's the thing I just wanted to say because of your posts and everything. Like, So what if we're the guy hiding behind this curtain? We shouldn't be scared. We should think of it as a liberating experience.
That is a beautiful thing to say. Thank you, Josh. Hold that in your heart and your head.
I will. All right. Thank you, Dr. Nina.
Okay. Bye for now.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye for now. Thank you.
Okay. And Carla Gash is there applauding and agreeing. I want to share an article I just did for the American Psychoanalytic Association has a blog post on Psychology Today. And I just last week wrote an article called What is Zoom Dysmorphia? Oh, is someone calling? Hello?
Good morning. Do you hear me?
Hi, Carly Gash. All right, I'm going to save Zoom Dysmorphia article for maybe another time. But Carly Gash, how are you doing?
Good morning, Dr. Nina. I'm okay today. I just wanted to say that I agree with Josh. He said that it's not that scary when you go deep. I recently started letting go of the fear of looking inside myself and accepting more of who I am. Instead of what I did before, like, you know, when I grew up, I was different than other girls or like conventionally accepted girls or whatever people told about women. I was more spirited. I was active. I used to run with boys. I was curious. I'm so curious. I will go miles to find out what's going on, why people are doing that. It's my natural curiosity. But I was always told that women should not be like that. Your clothes is dirty. You need to wear like a pretty dress and keep it clean. And like just things which never resonated with me. I always want to be in shorts, running, active, and like in dirt because I'm doing things as a kid, you know, exploring. And like Josh said, it's not scary. I started accepting this truth about myself. So I'm not wearing makeup. I'm showing up with acne. And I'm like, you know, that's my face. I have lime. I have processing in it. I'm tired of covering it up and making it perfect. So, and you know, I started noticing that people don't mind. People don't mind me being me. It's like more the voices in my head I had, like this critical, harsh voice. It's very hard to live being bombarded by those voices.
People like authenticity. You know, when you put on a bunch of makeup and all of that, I mean, look, you know, every once in a while, it's nice to go out with a bunch of makeup on and look, especially now we can go out. It's nice, but it's relying on that as if you've got to do that to be good enough. That's the problem. And that's what I hear you saying that you have overcome and that you are more willing to, you are able to show up as you, perfectly imperfect, and still feel good and good enough. And that is so powerful and empowering. We don't have to be a certain way. We don't have to weigh a certain way. We don't have to look a certain way. Actually, the most attractive quality is a sense of self-acceptance and confidence and calm, I think.
Mm-hmm. And recently, I started thinking about your phrase and the concept that just flew out of my mind. Oh, I just listened to your book 2 times in a row, audiobook, Binge the Binge Cure, and I keep listening it every day, like on repeat. And I was thinking about how you say, I actually had this thought when I was a kid and I became very sad. I explained. You say that you need to show up being authentic self, because if you show up with persona or whoever you hide behind, people love that personality, not authentic you, and then authentic me, and then authentic me left without love. I think this is so big and so important for many people, especially many of us being challenged by emotional health challenges. I think that's the clue, because it's like, you know, it's like showing up at your neighbor's house every day and working on their garden, you know? Imagine you work 10 hours a day on their garden. Yes, it looks beautiful. It's fantastic. The best trees and flowers grow there, but it's their garden. And then we just cross the fence, and I cross the fence, come to my house. There is no garden. Everything is like dried and awful because I never attended that authentic self, my house where I live. Instead, I was like putting all my resources into that persona. Yes, it looks good, but I left and left.
I love
enough.
That.
So I was.
I love that, Carly Gap. That's a very vivid way to put it. And yes, if you show up for other people never know it, for other people, meaning that show up and be who you think they want you to be, then you never feel accepted as yourself. And
you know,
wait, I'm done. I'm not done. You never feel accepted as yourself, and you feel empty. And when you feel empty and lonely and disconnected from other people, you can be vulnerable. And I don't mean you specifically, you, Carly Gash. I mean, we all, you as in plural you, you out there, you can be vulnerable to using food to symbolically fill the emptiness. And that's why it's so important to show up authentically and fill up, have fulfilling relationships. Like we talk about food and relationships in similar ways, satisfying relationships, fulfilling relationships. We talk about being starving for attention, hungry for love, right? When you don't let yourself be seen, you can't actually have mutuality, and you go empty and there's food. So I just wanted to make that point.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nina, for showing this direct connection, which is just so obvious for me right now. And it took me a lot of time to come to this understanding, because I was like so into this brainwashed concepts we have in society, like just flying here and there uncontrollably. So, and I remember when I was a kid, I was born, I exactly thought the same. I was thinking, I need to be myself. I need, like, not thinking like deliberately, but this is how I saw life and felt that, experienced it. Like, I need to be me. I had no trouble expressing my thought, emotions. And then, like, when other people were correcting me or saying whatever they say, I was just taking it as truisms, like you say, like truth. Whereas now I understand, I was a kid back then, of course I couldn't analyze people that well. But now I understand, like, just me being me, happy, vivid, lively kid, caused many issues with other people. And it's not me, it's their own traumas and dramas being stirred in conflict. And it's their impatience or whatever, their urge to tell me their opinion, how I should be in the world, because they cannot take it that someone is actually happy or different or something. But now I understand it was never my problem. It was their perception of me, and I'm not responsible for that.
And then you internalize those voices. Is a big part of what happens is we treat ourselves the way we are treated. So if we are dismissed or told we're too much, or, you know, something along those lines, then we start doing that to ourselves later. And Carly Gash, I know in the past you have called the show and you've actually spoken in the voice of those people, right? Your whole tone of voice changes when you talk about how you talk to yourself. And you would say, usually, see, you, blah, 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 and it was really mean. But I have to, I have to note that the last couple times you've called the show, that has not been present. You've actually been much kinder to yourself. You haven't treated yourself or spoken to yourself the way that you used to, which of course, when you're mean to yourself, you want to eat just to get away from your own mean voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a powerful shift that you've created by just recognizing and challenging those early voices and how you internalize them. You know, someone is critical to you, then you become critical to you. But when you can say, no, that's not me, that's not my voice, I'm going to regain me, my authentic self, which is what you were just saying, then you have this psychological exorcism, right? The voices of the others go out of your head, and mm-hmm. you're going to be a nurturing person to yourself, which I know you also are to other people.
Thank you. And I must also mention that it's not easy. It's not like I woke up one day and it's like, oh my God, I realized that all of them are out. No, I'm still struggling. It's challenging for me. One day is better. I'm not even talking days. Like, it's like 1 minute is better, 1 minute is worse. It's literally shifting and fluctuating so fast. But like in general, the trend is that, yes, I am being on my side better. And I also wanted to mention that, what I wanted to say, that when I was a kid and I was thinking that I need to be me, it was so important for me to be me when I was a kid. But then I remember, it was important for me to be me when I was a kid.
Sorry, your voice is a little fuzzy, so it was important for you to be you? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. When I was a kid, it was important for me to be me, myself. Like, yes. Express myself the way I feel, say my truth and being me. But then I remember when I was growing older and older, I was sadder and sadder because other girls were different. They were like more feminine. They got boyfriends faster, more of like male attention. And I was still like, I was 12 or 13. I was still like hanging on the trees, running with boys, playing games. I was still like more of a kid, I would say, rather than this maybe a girl kind of. And I remember I became so sad just seeing that how different I am from those women. And I think that the society and media never also helps women just posing this images, how women should be. It just very badly influences us, and it influenced me. And now, thanks me, I understand that it's not true. It's like Josh said, it's not scary to look at yourself, and I don't have to be that feminine woman. I am feminine, but I don't have to be like this maybe extra feminine wearing dresses every day. It's okay. Sometimes I wear a dress, but if I'm right now busy with something, some job which requires a lot of movement, I'd rather wear a sweatpants because my day is about like going and doing stuff. Carly and I'll Gash. Be much faster doing it and happier at the end.
Carly Gash. I want to say that you bring up an important point, which is that there is this idea that we are sold by society that when we look a certain, or that first that we're supposed to look a certain way, and second that when we look that way, then we will be happier, then life will be good. I had a patient who was constantly being told, oh, when you lose weight, men are going to be lined up around the block. They're going to want to be with you. When you lose weight, you're going to be just a knockout and everyone's going to be knocking on your door. Well, you know what? She lost weight and she said, where's the line around the block? It's not there. And she had to recognize that losing weight was not enough to make her someone that people wanted to be with, that we cannot control other people. We cannot control our lives by changing our weight. We have to, that's an illusion, right? Get to this weight, magical weight, and you're going to feel great about yourself and be confident. And if you're shy, you're going to be outgoing and you're going to have more friends and this or that. No, when you lose weight and everything else stays the same. You're still you, only your weight has changed. And so I wanted to really underscore this idea of the illusion that losing weight can make people like you more, treat you better, and that by losing weight, you lose the aspects of you that you don't like about yourself. Not true.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I'm very glad I'm able to see this right now, and I'm very glad I'm addressing it and changing. I was listening to you and Josh when you said that you need to change, someone needs to change their thinking, perception, you know, internal things to actually have a result, but not be focused on external, like outcome, overeating or gaining weight, which is already a result of what is not being effective or not going the right direction. So it's like, what's the metaphor? It's like imagine the a hose with water. When you water your garden, imagine that like the hose is facing you and like pouring water at you, and all you do, you're trying to like push this water out so you don't get wet. Well, you will get wet because the hose is pointing at you. What you need to do is come closer to the hose, which is the origin of the problem, right? And either turn it the other direction or turn it off. And then water will stop like beating in your face. So
emotional eating, any kind of, you know, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem. And the problem is in your relationship with yourself, your relationship to your feelings, your ideas about yourself. And when you address those and you change those, how you relate to yourself, how you think about yourself, how you relate to the world, all of these things, when you change that, everything with food changes for good. It's hard. It's harder to do that than it is to diet. But it's essential because this is your life. This is your only life. You have to make it the best life it can be. And you can't do that when you're in a constant battle with food and with yourself by changing the way that you think about yourself and respond to yourself. Everything else falls into place for good.
You know, Dr. Nina, I would say that it's not hard to do the work you say. It's actually way easier rather than being focused. I mean, it's unusual, of course, of what others offering out there, like diet this and do that. But I would say it's easier. It takes a little longer time, but it's easier in the end because eventually it gives the result. And why it is easier, when I do your work, I get like real tangible results, substantial, like fundamentally correct results, which then makes other things in life very easy. So I would say that this work is easier than just being focused on weight, dieting, and being miserable day by day. And if I'm miserable day by day and dieting, I don't get better, I don't even stay the same level. I always drop. I always become worse. So I would say doing your job on a daily basis is much better option. And it's very, it's like investing in your own progress and success and result and health day by day. Like you say, watering a plant. You water it every day and then it grows every day for you. So I would say it's easier. Maybe it doesn't look like this at first because it's very unusual, and not very unusual, but it's something you've someone never done, or someone who never.
Thank you, Carly Gash. Actually, you've brought us to the end of the show. So I want to thank you for those encouraging words. And maybe it's Josh is saying, I think the key word is genuine. When you do the work, when you dig out the roots, when you water the seeds, so ironic that I have all these metaphors about growth having to do with gardening. Such a green thumb. But anyway, I just want to say thank you to Josh and Carly Gash, who called in today to share their hearts and their minds and their process and their hope. And, I really appreciate your willingness to be vulnerable and to speak your truth and to show by calling the other listeners of this program what it looks like to go within, to dive into your internal world. And it isn't so scary, not when you have a guide. So thank you everyone, thank you for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am here live every Wednesday at 11 on LA Talk Radio, on LA Talk Radio Facebook, and on Instagram. You can listen later at Apple Podcasts. Just do a search for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. And if you like the show, please take a moment to leave a rating or even better, a review, because the more ratings and reviews that we get, the more people we reach, the more people we help. So thank you, everyone. Have a great week, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.